we are up. Nun Bays Amud Bays, the last line. Continuing about the Simchas Beis HaShe'eva, we described how they had the gigantic menorah, 50 amos tall. By the way, the Yerushalmi has a different version of it. The Yerushalmi has a version that the menorahs were 100 amos tall, and then it starts calculating based on the size of the bases you'd need to hold such a tall menorah. How was the room in the Ezras Nashim? And it ends up saying that it was mice and missing. So our Gemara instead has that they were 50 amos tall, and in that case, they didn't have to be mice and nisim because the bases wouldn't have to be quite so big. But still, as we said yesterday, the Pirchei Kohuna had a big effort carrying up heavy jugs of oil up the ladders. Anyway, the Mishnah had said, "V'loy ha'yachotzeh Yerushalayim." There was not a single chotzeh, not a single courtyard in Yerushalayim that wasn't illuminated by the light of the Beis HaShe'eva. So Tana, we learn in a Braisa. The light was so bright that a woman was able to check wheat, to pick out the dirt and whatever from a pile of wheat by the light of the Beis HaShe'eva. Actually, Tosfos brings, not necessarily do we mean that she was able to, because it's something of hektish, and even if there wouldn't be a technical problem of Me'ila with it, maybe, but nevertheless, it would still be Osir. So Tosfos says it doesn't mean that she actually could, it means she would have been able to. That's how bright the light was. On the other hand, there's Tosfos elsewhere that talks about that maybe this is an example of Lev based in Masna Aleha, maybe to begin with, when based in authorized that they should take, as we said, they had oil of hektish, they had the wicks were made from whipped up old Bigdei Kohuna, so maybe they made to begin with a t'nai when they were first makdish the oil, and when they were first makdish the Bigdei Kohuna, that eventually when the leftovers of them are used for this purpose, that people should be able to have hana from the light, and it wouldn't be me'ila. Okay. The Mishnah had said chassidim v'anshei mais, chassidim and people of good deeds, or of mais and tovim, would dance and sing in front of them. Good morning, Ellie. And they would say shiras v'tishbachas. They'd praise Hashem. So what praises would they sing? Tana Rabbanan, yesh mehen oimrim. Some of them would say the praise of Hashem. Ashrei yalduseinu, happy is our youth. In other words, happy is Hashem who gave us the kind of youth shalei bishas ziknuseinu that didn't embarrass our old age. So Eva Chassidim, V'anshei Ma'isa, that refers to the people who are Chassidim, which Rashi says the expression, Kol Chassid, have a Chassid Me'ikra. A person who is a Chassid means that all along, throughout his life, he was a Chassid. So he's saying this, so these kind of people are saying then that we're happy that Hashem made us, that Hashem helped us, that even in our youth, we didn't do the kind of things that now, when we're old, we should be able to look, we would have to look back at them and be embarrassed of what we did. And on the other hand, there are some of them that said, Ashrei ziknuseinu shekipra as yalduseinu. Happy is our old age, that it was mechaper for our youth. Eilu balei tshuva, that the balei tshuva would say that. In our youth, we did things that we shouldn't have. Now, Baruch Hashem, in our old age, we were able to be mechaper on that. Actually, the Me'iri understands the word is maybe not shekipra, meloshen kapara, but shekofra, like it denies. It goes against what we did in our youth. In our youth, we did the wrong thing, and now we're going against that and doing the right thing. Anyway, Elu v'Elu Oimrim, both groups would then continue. This is the famous song that's from with these words. Ashrei mishalei chotzer, happy is a person who didn't do Avedus in the first place. Or misha chotzer, but anybody who did, Yoshua, you should do tshuva, v'yim chaloi, and Hashem will forgive him. So those were the songs that they would sing. You see from this, by the way, that it's the older people who would be singing over there by Simchas Beis HaShe'eva. We mentioned the other day, nowadays it's not like that, or Simchas Beis HaShe'eva, everybody is involved, the old and the young, and that I've talked a number of times about that's an example of takonose kalkolose. We lose out by not having the Beis HaMikdash, but right now, at least we have a gain from it. For that everybody can participate in Simchas Beis HaShe'eva. In one time, that I've also talked about the idea. So you have, in other words, so we said that the young kohenim are the ones who are climbing up the ladders and lighting the lamps to create the atmosphere for the simcha, and then the old people are the ones who are dancing and singing, meaning representing, in other words, the idea that when do the older people have their real simcha? When are they able to their real simcha, when they see that the younger generation is ready to climb up ladders and to do everything that it takes to bring light of Torah into the world. Tanya, we learned in a braisa, Omru Olav al Hillel HaZaken, they said about Hillel HaZaken, he lived when the Beis HaMikdash was still standing. He became Nasi 100 years before the Churban, and he was Nasi for about 40 years. So Kshahoya Sameach Simchas Beis HaSheva, when he was rejoicing, he was one of these skenim who would be singing by Simchas Beis HaSheva. So he would say as follows: Imani kan hakol kan, if I am here, then everybody is here. Vim any kan mi kan, and if I'm not here, then who is here? Now, who is he talking about? So Rashi explains he wants to remind the people to not do averus, because then you're going to cause Hashem to leave the Beis Mikdash. So he speaks like as if in Hashem's name, if I am here, if the Shekhinah is here, then everybody can be here. Meaning as long as you do right and the Beis Mikdash continues to stand, then my Shekhinah will be here and everybody else will be here also. But if not, if you do the wrong thing and I take away my Shekhinah, he's speaking on behalf of Hashem, then who's going to be here? Because the Beis Mikdash is going to be destroyed and nobody is going to be able to be here. So that was to encourage people, make sure to stay on the right way, to do mitzvahs and not the opposite, so that the Beis HaMikdash continues to stand and Hashem's Shekhinah continues to be in it. Tosfos says that actually he's speaking on behalf of the Jewish people. He's saying the other way around, imani kan, the other way around, if we Jewish people are here, then Hashem is here. And if not, if we don't come, then Hashem's not going to want to be either. So in other words, he's saying it in praise of the Jewish people. The Yerushalmi, actually, Tosfos quotes part of this Yerushalmi, that the rest of the Yerushalmi, the previous part says that Hillel would actually tailor his message depending on what people were doing at the time. The Yerushalmi mentions, that ever brings it in a Sicha, that he would take a look, are the people doing the Simcha, the Pachaz, like in a wilder way, or are they doing it the kosher, like in a calmer way? And he would tailor his message accordingly. And there's a Sicha from 1 year, from Simcha Beis HaSheva, where they'd ever explained that those two things, pachas and kosher, represent rotzoi and shoiv, the feeling of rotzoi, that the person wants to run away and absorb themselves into halakus, versus shoiv, where a person knows he has to stay down here on earth. But you need a blend of those two. You need rotzoi without shoiv. You have the nodav and avihu. Shoiv without rotzoi, you don't have any excitement in avodah at all. So therefore, he'd tailor his message appropriately so that when the people are being too rotzoi dick, he would remind them of the importance of shoiv, and when they're being too shoiv, he would remind them of the importance of rotzen. There's another explanation about this. Ani kan, kol kan, is the Mezitcher Magid says, now that ever brings it as well, that he was actually referring to himself. So then the question is, Hillel is an honor. He's going to say, if I'm here, everybody's here, etc. What he means is, the Magid says, everybody is like nothing compared to the Eibishter. But on the other hand, we're over here. So if I, who am the least important of everybody here, if I'm here shepping Ruach HaKodesh, as we said the other day, that Simchas Beis HaSheva, that we brought from Tosfos, had said that from the Yerushalmi, that a person could draw Ruach HaKodesh at that point, if I'm on the level to be here, then surely everybody else is also. On the other hand, if I'm not here, then nobody else really belongs over here anyway, compared to the Eibishter, everybody, nobody is on a level for that. So in other words, it was an expression of his anivus to say that. He also used to say, who are your omer? Okay. And he also used to say as follows, another thing to encourage the people to come to the Beis HaMikdash, in lemakom shir ani ohev, the place that I love, shom ragla, melichis oisi, that's where my feet take me. And you have, by the way, this Medrash says similarly about David HaMelech. He says every day I'd make plans. I'm going to go here. I'm going to go there. I'm going to go to the theater. I'm going to go whatever. And my feet would automatically take me to the Beis Medrash. So that's Hillel is expressing the same idea over here. Make it that you want to come to the Beis Mikdash. You want to come to places of Kedusha and your feet will take you there. He also continues, Im tova yo besi ani ova yo besecha, if you come to my house, this part is also, he's speaking on behalf of Hashem, if you come to my house, ani ova yo besecha, then I will come to your house and give you a bracha there. Im ato le tova yo besi, but if you don't come to my house, ani le ova yo besecha, then I won't come to your house. As the pasuk says, in every place where I allow my name to be mentioned, ova yo lecha, ova yo rachticha, then I will come to you and bench you. So the makom asher azkir es shmi means the Beis HaMikdash. So if you come, so therefore the result of you coming to the makom asher azkir es shmi is over elecha, I will come to your house uveirachti. And also, since we're mentioning statements of Hillel that were meant to teach the people Midas Tovus and all, so here we have one from Pirkei Avos. He also one time saw a skull floating on the water. So the person had been killed and his head was floating in the water. And he recognized it. Rashi says he recognized that this was a well-known Ritzeach. So now he himself had gotten what he deserved. Allah. So he says that Al Da'at Taif, because you drowned other people, Atfuch, therefore they drowned you. And in the end, those who drowned you themselves are going to get drowned. So in other words, he wanted to teach people about the importance of understanding how Ashkacha Pratis works. There is a verse that it says in some Mephoshim on Pirkei Avos that the skull that he saw was none other than the skull of Paro. So he had drowned Jewish babies in the Nile, so now he got what was coming to him. In that case, the Vesof Metayfayach Yitrufun is actually, this is the Metayfayach in that case, is actually the Eivishter. And what does it mean, Yitrufun? Obviously, nobody's drowning the Eivishter, so then there's explanations up in Kabbalah what that means. But anyway, okay. Since we mentioned Hillel's expression about the place where I love to go, there my feet take me. So in a similar vein, Amar Rav Yechanan, Ragloi d'bar inish inun arvin bay, the feet of a person are his arevim, la'asad misbi'i, to a place where he's wanted, where he's needed. In particular, Rashi says the place where Hashem has decided that he's going to die, Taman Mevilin Yosei, that's where his feet take him. Hashem arranges that a person ends up in the place where it was decided, Milamaila, that he's going to pass away. There is actually a different vote on it. The Zevin has in Sipur Chassidim a story about a Chassid who used to regularly travel to visit his old Malamed in a shtetl over there. And one time he's in a hurry, he doesn't have enough time. And the Rebbe, I think it was the Tzemach Tzedek, tells him, still go and visit him because you're used to. Akitzur, he becomes very, very sick, and the Malamed is davening a lot for him. And later on, the Rebbe explains to him that based on this Gemara, La'asid misbi'i, the word misbi'i doesn't just mean where you're wanted, it also means where there's davening being done for you. The word ba'usa, bo'i, ba'usa means davening. So Hashem arranges that you end up in the place where you will be davened on behalf of to save you, as in fact happened in this case. So the Gemara tells a story. Hanu tre kushoi. There were these two kushim. Kushim literally means dark-skinned people, but Rashi says they were actually very handsome, so they're called that the same way as Tzipora, Moshe's wife, is called Ha'isha HaKushis. So there were these two people. Dahabu Kaimi Kame Shlomo. They stood in front of Shlomo to serve him, and their names were Elichoda Fachia Bnei Shisha Sofrim de Shlomo Habu. So their names were Elichoda and Achia. Their father's name was Shisha. They were Shlomo's scribes, whose job it is to write down everything that Shlomo needs. Their father Shisha actually had done the same thing for David HaMelech. Anyway, Yom Echad Chazya L'Malach HaMavos to have a Ka'otzi. One day, Shlomo HaMelech sees the Malach HaMavos, and he sees that he's upset. Omalei Amai Yatsiva, so he asks him, what's the matter? Why are you sad? Omalei, so he says, D'kabo minai hani tauti kushoi d'yas mihocha, because they're telling me, Mi'ashamayim, that I have to go and get these two kushim that are living over here. Now, really what it is in other words, so Shlomo figures in that case, why is the Malach HaMavos upset? I mean, isn't that his job? It must be he's upset because these guys are so handsome. How you talking? I should have to take them out of the world. So Shlomo figured in that case, let me save them. I'll send them to a place where the Malach HaMavos can't get them. Masrinu l'seirim, so he gave Elichoda and Achia over to Shadim, because we have the whole story in Gittin how Shlomo ended up controlling for a period of time Ashmedai, the king of the Shadim, and with that he controlled all the other lesser Shadim as well. Shadrinu l'machuzet l'luz, and he sent them to the area of Luz. Luz is a city, so you have in Sefer Shoftim, it tells how when Shevet Yosef were trying to conquer their portion of Eretz Yisrael, so they came across a city called Luz, a Basel, also called Luz, the one from Yaakov's dream. Anyway, they couldn't find their way into the city. Akitzer, they finally found somebody who hinted to them how to get in, and so they spared him and his family. They went to Eretz Achitim, and they built a city called Luz over there, named after his old city, and the Gemara in Sota tells us that no foreign power ever conquered it and then took the people into Golos, and even the Malach HaMavos has no power over that city. So Shlomo figured these guys will be safe in Luz over there, the Luz in Eretz Achitim, because the Malach HaMavos has no power over there. But when they came to the area around Luz, they hadn't gotten into the actual city yet, they're only in the area around it, Shchivu, they passed away. Lamacha Chazi Malachamavis Dava Kabodach. The next day, Shlomo sees the Malachamavis is happy. Amalei Amai B'dichas. He says, why are you in such a good mood? Amalei, he says, Ba'asa Deboi Minai Taman Shidartinu. The exact place where they told me, Minashamayim, that I have to get them, that's exactly where you sent them. What you just did backfired. So in other words, now Shlomo realized it wasn't the Malach HaMavis was upset how Yitoch and I should have to kill such handsome people. Just the opposite. He was upset. He has a job to do to kill them in the area near Luz. And what's he going to do? They're hundreds of miles away from Luz. So Shlomo played right into his hands. Miyad Pasach Shlomo V'Omar. So right away, Shlomo started saying exactly what we just said. Ragloi Dibar Inish. Inun Arvin Bay, a person's feet are his Aravim, La Asa de Misbi, to the place where he's needed, Taman Mevilin Yosei, that is where his feet bring him. You see, by the way, in other words, you see the Balei Amusa say a vote from on this. You see, in other words, how an example of how a person tries to do something, tries to do their own calculation and their own whatever, and it backfires because the Eibishter has his plans, and you know they're so you're supposed to do certain things, you're supposed to make your own kalim, but ultimately after that you're supposed to rely on the Eibishter beyond that. And sometimes you have a person tries to do too much of their own pa'ulus and it backfires. Something very negeya nowadays, particularly. There's a lot to think about as far as that. But anyway, okay. Getting back to Simchas Beis Yosheva, Tanya, Omru Olav Arab Shimon Gamliel, Shohayah Sameach Simchas Beis Yosheva. So again, we're saying the Chachamim would do the Simchas Beis Yosheva. And the Rambam, by the way, stresses, and when he describes it at the end of Hilchos Sukkah, he says not just anybody would do the singing and dancing and entertaining and whatever. It's only the Zkenim and Tamid Chachamim and Anshei Maisa and whatever. So they said about Rab Shimon Gamliel, when he was rejoicing by Simchas Beis Yosheva, he would take 8 lit torches, he'd throw one up and catch the other one, so he was juggling them, in other words, and one of them would not touch another. Marsha points out that maybe one reason why Dr. 8 is because you have 4 spaces on each hand between your fingers, so he's able to hold one item, in this case one torch, between every 2 fingers, totaling 8, and then he's juggling them. And also another thing that Rav Shimon Gamliel knew how to do when he was bowing in the Beis Hamikdash, he did a special kind of bowing. He would stick his 2 thumbs on the ground and bend down and kiss the floor and then stand up straight. So Rashi says he's kissing the floor because, after all, the stones of the Beis Hamikdash, and it's something choshuv to kiss. Marshall says that's not really relevant by Simchas Beis Yosheva more than any other time. So he says a different reason why he would have been doing that is like an expression of simcha or something. Anyway, the idea is, in other words, so the person kind of. So it's not really clear from the Gemara's description. Are we talking about it's something almost like push-ups, where he stretches out almost flat and parallel to the floor, and he just holds his thumbs to keep the upper half of his body off the floor, and then he stands back up? Or are we talking about where he stands on his feet and then bends double and uses his thumbs to pick himself back up afterwards? Anyway, in Kobria, Yechol Lassus K. Nobody else knows how to do that. This is called Vizuikida. This is what's called in the Pasuk in various places in Tanakh. It mentions that somebody by Yikoid or Vatikoid, whatever, Apayim Arza, that's what it means. Because the point is, in other words, the only thing that's touching the floor of the person is his Apayim, is his face, as opposed to his Shtachava, which involves stretching out flat on the floor. And so the Gemara mentioned, so sort of Shimon Gamliel knew how to do that. So on the other hand, the Gemara mentions Levi Ach V'Kidya Kamei de Rebbe. A few generations later, Levi, one of the Talmidim of Rebbe, one time demonstrated Kidya in front of Rebbe, the Itla, and it caused him to become lame. Because what happens is, if he has to pick himself back up by pushing himself off with his thumbs, really, in other words, the whole weight of his body to pick himself back up vertical is on his hips. So it was a tremendous strain on his hips, and it caused him to become lame. So the Gemara asks, "You're telling me that's what caused him to become lame?" A person should never throw words against Hashem. In other words, like speak to Hashem in a chutzpahdik way. Because you find that a great person did that. He spoke harsh words against Hashem. You have a Gemara in Tainis where there was a fast rain, and Levi gets up over there to be the chazan, and he says a tefillah to Hashem. Hashem, you're sitting up there in Shemayim, and you don't care. You don't care about what's happening to your children down below, which is a very harsh thing to say to the Eibishter. And the Ithlan, he became lame. Umanu Levi, and that's Levi. So that's what caused him to become lame, not that he tried Kiddah. The answer is Havaha Garmale. Both things caused it. In other words, he had to be punished for what he said, which was not respectful to Hashem. And so it happened at a time when he was already in danger, namely Kiddah. Then the Eibishter took that opportunity, so to speak, to do it, and then he became lame. The Gemara continues more about Chachamim who juggled. Levi had a matayo kamei de Rebbe b'tmani sakini. Levi used to play around, used to juggle in front of Rebbe with 8 knives. So why is he doing it in front of Rebbe? This is long after the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. There's no Simchas Beis Yesheva, but Rashi says that Rebbe was a Nasi. He's always in a serious mood about the troubles of the Jewish people. So his Talmidim would do various things to try and honor him and cheer him up. Rashi brings from the Gemara in Nedarim that on a day when Rebbe would laugh, that Puranus would come to the world. So Mastama, they had to be very careful to do it in a way that Rebbe will, at least that it'll lift some of Rebbe's gloom, but not in a way that'll actually make him laugh. Okay. Shmuel Kamei Shabur Malka. Shmuel would do the same, would perform in front of Shabur Malka, who was the king of Persia. So in his honor, Shmuel would do Batmanya Mazvi Chamra. You would juggle eight glass cups of water of wine without any of the wine spilling, Rashi says. Abaya Kame de Rava, or de Rabba, really. It's supposed to be Batmanya Bei. Abaya would juggle in front of Rabba, who was his Rebbe, with 8 eggs, some say with 4 eggs. So Marsha says, in other words, is he holding them all in one hand or in two hands? Like we said, there's 8 spaces between your fingers. So is he able to hold 8 eggs and juggle from his 2 hands, or is he only able to hold 1 hand? Like Marsha says, Tanya, Amar Rabbi Shoban Chananya, during the time that Rabbi Shoban Levi lived the first half of his life while the Beis Hamikdash was standing, and he was actually one of the Levim whose job was to open and close the gates of the Beis Hamikdash. So he describes when we were rejoicing in Simchas Beis Hasheva while the Beis Hamikdash was standing, that entire week of Sukkot, we didn't see proper sleep with our eyes because we were so busy from one thing to another. Ketzad, what happened? Shari Shana Tomat Shoshachar. The first thing in the morning and the first hour of the day, we have to take care of the Tomat Shoshachar. Misham Latfila, from there we go to Davin. Misham the Korban Musaf, then to bring the Korban Musaf. Misham Latfila Samusafin, and the Davin Musaf. You see from this, by the way, that even though we say the Tfilas are connected to the Tmidim, nevertheless, we see they still Davin those Tfilas while the Beis Hamikdash was standing. The Tashbetz actually has a Gilyon Hashas. Rabbi Akiva Eger brings over here, refers over here to a tshuva of the Tashbetz on this subject, one of the late Rishonim. He mentions that point, and he says also the vote would be in our davening nowadays. We daven in various places that the Beis Hamikdash should be rebuilt, that the Jewish people should be gathered in from Golos, etc., etc. Their tefillos were that the Beis Hamikdash should remain built, that the Jewish people should stay in Eretz Yisrael, etc. Anyway, so they would daven tefillas musaf, misham la beis medrash, from there we go to the beis medrash to learn Torah, misham la achilosh siya, from there to eat and drink in honor of Yom Tov, misham la tefillas mincha, and then to daven mincha, misham la tamat shabena abayim, and then from then the tamat shabena abayim. Actually, Gilui Nashas brings from that shuvah where it's the other way around. First, Tomat Shabbat Abayim, and then Tfilas Mincha. Okay. Mikan Ve'elach, the Simchas Beis Yesheva. And then the whole rest of the night, we're doing Simchas Beis Yesheva because the Rambam described they started it after Tomat Shabbat Abayim, and they continued all night until, as we learned earlier in the parak, it was time to go to the Shiloyach spring and draw the water. So they had one thing after another. There was no time in there for sleep. So the Gemara says, what do you mean, Aini? Is that so? So they didn't sleep for an entire week? If a person makes a shvua that I won't sleep for 3 days, Malkinoi, say we give him Malkus because he made a false shvua. because it's impossible for a human being to go 3 days straight without any sleep. But Yosh and La'alter, and once they give him out, because he can sleep right away. In other words, we don't say you have to now try to fulfill your neder as much as possible, shvu or whatever, as much as possible, and stay awake as much as possible. And then if you're falling asleep, no, we said to begin with it was a shvuas shav, and therefore so Malkus he gets, but then right away he can sleep. He doesn't have to even try to fulfill the shvua at all. So what are you telling me that they were able to be awake for full 7 days? Ella hachi karma. What he means is like amnu tam shena. We didn't taste the taste of real sleep. Meaning they have a menamnemi akasva dahadadi. They would doze on each other's shoulders as they're standing there. By simchas beis yesheva, one person would put his head on the other one's shoulders and doze off for a minute or two. But so they managed to get enough sleep to keep them going. So that's not a shvuas shav, but nevertheless they didn't have actual sleep.
They didn't sleep in the
shul. So one thing is in the sicha in Chelek Chavtes, which we've talked about earlier in the Masechta, about the Indian that Lubavitcher Minig is not to sleep in the sukkah. The Rebbe mentions this Gemara, and he says you see from that you can be fully yotz of the mitzvah of sukkah without actually sleeping in it, because obviously Rabbi Shor ben Chananya and his chaverim are going to be fulfilling the mitzvah in the best possible way. There's a different sicha also, where the Rebbe pointed out what it is when a person sleeps. I mean, what does it mean? It means that his head and his feet, all of his body, are on the same level, representing, in other words, a person is going down in level. So therefore, now here he's mentioning Simchas Beis Hasheva, but when you get down to it, Simchas Beis Hasheva is only at the end of the day's schedule. He starts out with Tamid Shel Shachar. The point is, throughout the day, even the rest of the activities that they do are all permeated with the spirit of Simchas Beis Hasheva, and that spirit is that you're not going to allow at any time that your head is going to be on the same level as your feet. Your head is always going to be higher than your feet, even when you're having to doze off for a couple of minutes. In other words, you're always going to be in control of where you are. Bergashmius, Beruchnius, represented by the head, the Moyach Shalat Alalev, even when they're supposed to be sleeping. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Chamesh Esrei Milus, we said that the Levim would stand on the 15 steps between the Ezras Noshim and the Ezras Yisrael, and they'd be playing instruments over there, and we said that those 15 steps correspond to the 15 Shir HaMalus in Tilit. So let's talk about those Shir HaMalus. Omelet of Chistela HuMirabonon, Da'avakam Asader Agad Tekameh, Rav Chista says to one of the Chachamim, who used to regularly arrange Agadte in front of him. So in other words, this Talmid Chacham used to be, he was an expert, so to speak, in Ein Yaakov, and he used to tell over Agadtes in the yeshiva in front of Rav Chista. So he asks him, Amalei, Shmialach Hani Chamesh Esher Milus Kenegan Mi Omram David, have you heard anything about these 15 Shir HaMalus, what David said them corresponding to? Why Dafka 15? And why HaMalus? Amalei, so he tells him, Hachi Omer Rav Yechanan. This is what Rav Yechanan said. The Shasha Kora David Shisin. When David dug out the Shisin, now we learned the other day, the Shisim are the underground tunnel or underground cavity into which the Nesachim, the Nisachamayim and the Nisachayayim spilled into them, and then they went down to the Tehoim. So when David was carving them out, so Rashi says, we learned previously on Daf Mem Tes that they were from Sheshes and Ebereshes. So either Rabbi Yechanan over here, or rather another Amorah in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, because there was also Rabbi Yechanan saying it, holds that no, they weren't from Sheshes and Ebereshes, but rather that there was something new built by, dug out by David. Or he says, the other possibility is, which we said the other day, the Ritva also says that maybe what it is they got stuffed up over the years and David had to redig them out. Actually, the Marasha has a whole interesting explanation. Further on in the Gemara, at the end of the Sugya, Rashi asks, we have this story involves Achitofel. Now, Achitofel died a few years before the end of Shlomo's reign. Because what happened was, you had about 3-4 years before David passed away, Avshalom revolted. Achitofel was one of his supporters. And then when he realized that Avshalom is going to lose, then he went and committed suicide. So he's gone a few years before David himself passed away. Now, when did David buy Gurna Rabna Yavusi? Was in the last year of his reign. You have the whole story over there at the end of Sefer Shmuel, where there was a plague, and Hashem told him to go to Gurna Rabna Yavusi and buy it from him and build him his Beach, etc., etc. So only then did he discover the place of the Beis Hamikdash. So how is he over here digging out the Shisin a few years before that, while Achitofel was still alive? So Rashi says you have to say maybe that that David knew where the place is. So years before, while Aravna still owned the place, he had arranged with him to be able to start digging out the shisin, and that's the story over here. Marashah says, "Come on, that's it's mashma from the pesukim over there that he had no idea that this is the actual Mokam HaMikdash." So Marashah says a very interesting point. We know, the Gemara tells us in Zvachim, that many years earlier, while Shmuel was still alive, one night he and David sat down and worked out where the Beis HaMikdash is supposed to be built, based on the topography as described in Sefer Yehoshua. So they came to, at one point, they came to the conclusion that the Beis HaMikdash should be built in Ein Etam, which is the highest point in Eretz Yisrael, in that part of Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara tells us in Yoma, it's 23 and a half amos taller, 23 and a fraction amos higher than the floor of the Beis HaMikdash. So now, then they realize that you can't build it actually there because of Ein Ksev HaShachin, it has to be a little bit lower. Now, what happened was, Marashah explains, so they knew it has to be someplace lower. They didn't know exactly where. So what happened was, when we're talking about over here, David digging out the shisin, it wasn't actually in the future site of the Beis HaMikdash on Har HaMoriah. It was a different place, in Ein Etam, or someplace near there, where he's digging out shisin, thinking that that's going to be the eventual place of the Beis HaMikdash. At that point, Achitophel was still alive. Eventually, he found out in the 40th year of his reign, after Achitophel was dead a couple of years, then he discovered that, no, I was wrong. The actual place is here on Har HaMoriah, which is slightly lower than Ein Etam. And then he actually bought that from Aravna and built the Mizbeach, etc. That's how Marashah learned. Anyway, so when David was digging out the shisin, Kofa Tahoma, the Tahoim, the underground waters, started swelling up. Bala Mishtafa Alma, it was going to flood the world. In fact, the Medrash adds detail to that, that what happened was, while David was digging out these shisin, he came across a piece of earthenware over there. And the earthenware, the piece of clay, started talking to him, Derech Nes, and explaining to him that I'm the plug here that Hashem put after the Mabul to prevent the world from being flooded again. So don't move me, because then the world's going to flood. And David didn't pay attention, and he moved it anyway, because he had shisin to build, and all of a sudden, sure enough, the water starts swelling up and is threatening to flood everything. Omer David Chamesh Asir Ma'alus V'Hiridon. So David said the 15 Shira Ma'alus, and he brought it back down. So he asks him, so Rav Chista asked him, if that's the whole story, why is he calling him Shira Malas? Yodos mi boile, he should be calling him 15 Shira Yodos, because each one for the water to go down. Omalei, so the Ahumer Rabbanon says to Rav Chista, hoil vid kaut and milsa, and since actually you reminded me, you're right, Rashi says, Rav Chista said to him, you've reminded me now, I'd forgotten about this vort of Rav Yechanan. Now that you started reminding me, you said it wrongly, but now you reminded me, I'll tell you what Rabbi Yechanan really said. This is how Rabbi Yechanan really told the story. When David was digging out the shisin, the tahoim started swelling up, a bowl of mishtafa alma, it was going to flood the world. Amar David, so David started asking, "Mi ika de yada? Is there anybody who knows? Ishori lemichtav shem achaspa? Is it mutter to write a name of Hashem on a piece of earthenware and throw it down into the depths?" Now, why dafka on earthenware? Why not on paper, let's say? Because you need something heavy that'll actually fall down there, Rashi says. Umanach, and then that way the tahoim will calm down. So actually here, Rashi brings the thing that David had found the cheres there from Sheshes Mevereshes, right? So are you allowed to do that? Now, David himself knew the answer, Rashi says, but because Achitophel was there, and Achitophel was his Rebbe, he didn't want to be murder halacha b'fnei Rabbi. An interesting point in that, Achronim ask is, I mean, you're talking a case of pikuach nefesh, and you're worried about that, or b'chlal, a case of pikuach nefesh, and you're worried about whether you're allowed to put a name of Hashem on a piece of earthenware, of course, everything except for Avodah Zarah Gilad Ayis Shpichas Damim. So they give different answers. One of them is that maybe that doesn't apply to Chilul Hashem, and to have a name of Hashem erased over there in the water would be Chilul Hashem. I think the Oruch Baner gives that answer. Another answer is that maybe it would be a Bizrayhu Avodah Zarah, just like you have, you know, Avodah Zarah, Gilad Ayis, and Shpichas Damim. Each one of them also has a Bizrayhu, has secondary things that are outgrowths from it that are also Osir, even in a case of Pekorach Nefesh. So arguably, this may be erasing Hashem's name is Abizrayu David Azara. After all, where do we learn it from in the Pasuk? It says you have to destroy the names and the identities and whatever of all the Getchkes, but don't do that to Hashem. So maybe it's considered an outgrowth of David Azara, and you wouldn't be allowed to do it. Anyway, Leka de Ka'amale Midi, nobody was saying anything. Amar David, so David said in desperation, called the Yodel Amem of Eina Omer, anybody who knows what to say and doesn't actually say it, Yechonik Begroino, he should end up getting choked in his neck. Media connected media. In other words, you're going to cause the whole world to be flooded, to be drowned. Then that person who doesn't say when he's supposed to deserves to have his air cut off as well. By the way, this is an example of pilas chacham afilal tnai hiba, because that's taka what happened taki tofel when he committed suicide. It was that he choked himself. He strangled himself. So now Achitofel realized he had to speak up. Why didn't he want to speak up before? Actually, it's brought, some of the Mephoshim say, because Achitofel had, maybe the Medrash says it, whatever, that Achitofel had in mind that David will be drowned, Taka, and then he can take over the kingship. He's always looking. The Gemara tells us in Sanhedrin that he actually had a vision that his descendants are going to be kings. He didn't realize, actually, that it was talking about that Bathsheba is his granddaughter, and from her comes Shlomo. But he figured that after David gets drowned, then he'll find a way to get the water to go back down. With that said, by the way, I should mention the Orma Foshim will say maybe it doesn't mean that the world is going to be completely flooded like it would have been by the Mabul or something. It just means a lot of lives would be disrupted and everything. You know, people's houses would be flooded, like after a hurricane or something, but not necessarily. So that would be another reason why David was concerned. Maybe in that case, just to prevent that, maybe you're not allowed to erase Hashem's name. It's not a true case of Pikuach Nefesh. Anyway, Nosa Achitofel Kavachomer Ba'ar. So Achitofel now made a Kavachomer on himself. He figures, in order to make peace between a husband and wife, to test a soita, the Torah says that my name, which was written in Kedusha, is erased into the water. How much more so to make shalom for the whole world and prevent it from being flooded? So he tells David, yes, you're allowed to do that. Sure enough, cost of Shema Chaspa. So David wrote a name of Hashem on a piece of earthenware. V'shodi l'tahoma, he threw it down into the tahom. V'nachas tahoma shitzer alfi garmidi, and the water of the tahom, the underground water, receded by 16,000 amas. Ki chazit, 16,000 amas. You think of it in Rav Avraham Chaim Noah's version, at least. I mean, an amma is about a foot and a half. So you're talking 24,000. You're talking 24,000 feet. Dividing that down into miles, you're talking like over 7 miles deep. That's very far underground. So Omar is kichazi dinachis tova. When David saw that the Tahoim had receded and gone down that much, Omar, he says that's not really so good. Kama de midli kfei mirkev alma. The higher, the closer to the surface, the underground water is, the more the earth will be moistened. After all, you need the world needs water in order the world needs water. You can't depend only on rainfall. You need underground springs and underground sources of water as well. If it's 16,000 amas below ground, you're not going to be able to get that. So Omer Chamesh Esrei Milos Faske Chamesh Alfi Gamidi. So he said the 15 Shiram Milos and brought it back up 15,000 amas. So that's why now we understand why they're called Hamalos, because they're actually bringing things up. But Oikme, but Alfe Gamidi, so he set now that the Tahoim is a thousand amas underground. And that's reasonable. Oma Ula Shmamino, you see from that, Sumcha Da'ara Alfe Gamidi, you see from that that the thickness of the earth down till the Tahoim is 1,000 amas. When we say in Brachas, Roika or Atalamoyib, that's what we mean. There's water underground and Hashem spreads out the earth above it. Now we see that spreading is 1,000 amas deep. So the Gemara asks, "V'chazinin to Karin and Purt of Nachimaya." What do you mean? We see that we often dig much less than 1,000 amos and we get water. That comes from the ladders of Prus, meaning, so the Prus River starts off in very high mountains. So now what happens is water seeks its own level, and that's how water pressure works. For example, in small towns, they have water towers for that reason, that way you have water pressure without needing pumps. So by the same token, in other words, the water that begins at a high level in the sources of the Prus in the mountains, so either Prus then descends to lower levels, but you still have underground and underground caverns and channels near the Prus. You can have the water rises much higher because it rises to its original level that it started out with at the mountains, or as high as it can go, and therefore in those places you can dig only a little bit and you'll be able to find water. But if you were to go to a place where you don't have that and you have to dig all the way down to the underground aquifers, then yes, you would have to dig 1,000 amas, is what I was saying. This whole thing, Marsha explains, there's a few things in it. First of all, the 15 also represent the name Yud-Kei, which is why, in fact, we had in the previous Mishnah that they divided the steps into a group of 10 and a group of 5. We're going to talk about it in the Gemara. We're going to talk about it in the Gemara now, representing the letters Yud and Kei. So that the 15 Shamalos also represent that. And he also mentioned, you have Sukkim in those Kapitlach that represent this whole story about how they were almost drowned, Azai over Anafshenu Amayim as they join him, and all the Sukkim over there, Baruch Hashem, Shalom Nesananu, etc. So it all represents Ezreinu B'Shem Hashem, our help is with the name of Hashem, which is actually used to plug up the hole over there. So there's an idea that the idea behind this whole story, in other words, is that when the Eibishter first created the world, there's Mayim Elyonim. Originally, there's just Mayim, and then they're separated into Mayim Elyonim and Mayim Tachtonim. And the Mayim Tachtonim want to be able to join together with the Mayim Elyonim, and Hashem forces them to stay underground. But he tells them, you're going to have your time sometimes to become Mayim Elyonim, in particular with Nisach HaMayim. So now, when he's digging out the Shisin that are connected with Nisach HaMayim, so now they're about to join with the Mayim Elyonim again, and then they have to be put back into their proper place. There's also the idea that the building of the Beis Mikdash is like a miniature building of the world. The Beis Mikdash B'chlal, it talks about in various Sfarim, is like a miniature world. And therefore, when David is building the Beis Mikdash, when he's doing the first stage of building the Beis Mikdash, digging out the Shisin, so things happen like happened originally by Ma'aseh Bereishis, where the water originally covered the whole earth, and Hashem has to tell it to go back to its place. Okay, we said in the mission of Omdu Koyanim Shara Elyon Shigurkhula, two Koyanim would stand by the upper gate by Shara Nikono, which leads down to the Ezra's Noshim. And then we said in the Mishnah, they would blow Tkiya through Tkiya as a signal that it's time to go fill up the water. And then when it says when they reach the 10th step, they would also blow Tkiya through Tkiya. So what do we mean the 10th step? Lamaila Asidus means the Nochis Hamish of Akoya Asara. Do we mean they went down 5 steps and now they're on the 10th step from the bottom? Or the other way around, they walk down 10 steps, and now they're on the 10th step from the top, 5 steps from the bottom. So we don't know. Then it says, the Mishnah continues, and says that then when they reach the Shara HaYotzei LeMizrach, the eastern gate of the Ezra's Noshim, they would turn around and they would say that unlike our ancestors who faced away from the Heichal and bowed towards the sun, we look towards Hashem. So turn it up on him, and they quoted the Pasuk in Yechezkel that says that the Achireim al Heichal Hashem, that their backs were towards the Heichal, or Pneim Kedma, and their faces were towards the east. So turn it up on him, Mimashma Shenem, or Pneim Kedma, from the fact that it says that their faces were towards the east, automatically don't we realize that it means that their backs were towards the Heichal. So what does that phrase mean? Means that they did a further chutzpah. Not only they're bowing to the sun right there in the Beis Mikdash also, but they uncovered themselves and went to the bathroom there, klapei mata, downwards in front of the Heichal. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, actually, why do we need to be told about such a horrible thing they did? The reason is it makes us realize that when the Eibishter caused the first Beis Mikdash to be destroyed, he had good reason for it, because they were acting in such a way. We end up saying, but we're not like that. Onu l'ka o l'ka einenu. We are for Hashem and to Hashem are our eyes. So they're using the word l'ka back to back in the same phrase. So Aini, is that so? They were allowed to say it that way. If a person says Shema and repeats each pasuk, then it's like he's saying Modim Modim, which the Mishnah tells us that if a person says Modim Modim, we tell him to be quiet, Meshatkinoi, because it sounds like he's acknowledging two powers. So, and the same thing if a person says the pasuk of Shema twice. So how are they saying Lekah twice, which sounds almost as though they're acknowledging two Hashems? The Ella Hochi Amri, what they mean is Hema Mishtachvim Kedma Va'onu Lekah, means they were bowing to the east, but we bow to Hashem. Anachnu Modim, we acknowledge Hashem. Ve'einenu Lekah Miyachlos, and our eyes are hoping towards Hashem that He should help us. So in other words, they're saying the name Yud Kei in two different contexts, and therefore it's not a problem. This that Rashi mentions over here, by the way, that he repeats the pasuk twice, that's Rashi's shita. A number of Rishonim learn the other way around. Now, there's two different things. The Gemara mentions in Brachas, there's where a person says the pasuk twice. He says Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, and then again repeats it Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. And then there's where the person says each word twice, Shema Shema Yisrael Yisrael, etc. So the Gemara calls one of them that Meshatkino. You say we tell him to be quiet, and the other one that's just Meguna. It's a repulsive thing to do, but not Meshatkino. You say Rashi over here and in Brachos learns that to say the whole pasuk again is Meshatkino. You say because it sounds like he's acknowledging two gods, whereas if he just says each word twice, then it's only Meguna, but we're not Meshat, because it sounds like he's just being silly, but we're not Meshat, can I say? A number of Rishonim learn the other way around. And they say that if you repeat the pasuk, then that's Meshat, can I say? So they bring in that connection. What about, we have times at the end of Yom Kippur, we say, at the end of Yom Kippur, when we say, so there are Minhagim where they say Shema more than once. Don't you have a problem? So in fact, Rabbeinu Yonah brings, okay, since it's an ancient minhag and we're doing it with Tzibur, then it's not such a problem. We're obviously not acknowledging two powers with it. We're doing it as a covered for the Eibishter. Nevertheless, though, that may be why our minhag is taka. We only say the Pasuk Shema once. Baruch Shem, we can already say three times, fine, because it doesn't actually have the Eibishter's name in it. And Hashem Hu Elokim is for sure not a problem, it says, because there we're saying seven times, it representing that we're escorting the Shekhinah back to the Shivarakim, and in the original pasuk itself, where they said it in the Yahweh's time, there itself it says twice, Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem Hu Elokim. So that there's no problem to repeat. It's not Merci Kishtei Rishuyas. Okay. The Mishnah says, Ein Poichsim, since we mentioned the Tekiyas that they're blowing by Nisuch HaMayim, so let's talk in general about the Tekiyas that they did in the Beis HaMikdash. They never had less than 21 tekiyas every day in the Mishmikdash. And the 21 consist of seven groups of tekiyah, trua, tekiyah. The in my sifin ala boy mishmoina, they never had more than 48. On a regular day, there were 21 because they had sholosh l'psichas sha'arim, three when they first opened the gates of the Azara. So tkiya tru tkiya, v'teisha l'tomet shoshacha, v'teisha l'tomet shabena abayim, and nine for each of the two tmidim. What they would do is, while they're bringing the korban tomid, is when the levim would be singing the shir shoyim. They would divide the shir shoyim, each day's shir shoyim, they'd divide into three parts, and at the end of each part, the kohenim would blow the chatzotris, and everybody would bow down. So tkiya tru tkiya at the end of the first perek, Tkiya Tru Tkiya at the end of the second, at the end of the third, and that's nine Tkiyas that during the Shira by the Tumah Shoshacha, and another nine by the Tumah Shabbat Abayim, so that's 18, when the 21, the three when they open the gate, so that makes 21. Over Musaf and Havi Masif and Od Tesha, when there was a Korban Musaf, then there's another nine, because then you have a Shir Shoyim for Musaf as well. So most of the Yom Tovim, we don't know what the Shir Shoyim was for Musaf, and there are different opinions. For Sukkot, we're going to be discussing in the Gemara tomorrow, Best Hashem, what the Shir Shoyims were for the day after tomorrow, rather. We're going to be talking about what the Shir Shoyims were for the various days of Sukkot on Daf Nun Hei. Over Erev Shabbos, Hoyim Masif and Sheish, on Erev Shabbos, they would add another six. Sholosh Lahav Tilas Amim Malacha, three to tell the people to stop working. The Gemara in Shabbos gives the details. The first one would tell the people who are working out in the field to stop. The second one would be the people who are working closer to the city to stop, etc. V'sholosh lahavdol ben kodesh l'chol, and then another three to divide, to separate between kodesh and chol. So they'd blow those three, and then at the end of the third, that's it, it's Shabbos. So on an Erev Shabbos, you had six. They actually found, now on the face of it, it doesn't mean Dafka, they'd have to blow these tekiyas in the Beis HaMikdash. For Pashtus, they blow them every place where Jews live. But because the Beis HaMikdash was high up above Yerushalayim, it was a natural place to blow, and that way everybody will be able to hear it. They actually found in an archaeological dig a couple of decades back, they found a fragment of a stone that's from the wall of the Beis HaMikdash that's labeled Lebeis HaKoyanim, Lebeis HaTekiyah LaHak. And that's broken off at that point. So the base at Kia. So this was from the base at Kia, from where? On the way to the base at Kia, we were the Kohenim and blowing shofar for this purpose. Erev Shabbos, Shabbos Seichachag, Hoyo Shema Boi Mushmoina. Now on Erev Shabbos, during Sukkot, there would be 48 blowing. Sholosh L'psichas Sha'arim, three when they're opening the gate, like we said, like every other day. Sholosh L'shara Elyon, three that they would blow by the upper gate, by Shaar Nikaner, on their way to filling up the water for Nisach HaMayim. The Sholosh L'shara Tachten, three by the Shara Tachten, by the eastern gate of the Ezras Noshim. Now, we're not doing the one on the 10th step, and the Gemara is going to explain why. V'shalosh l'milui hamayim. Three, when they actually filled up the water, which means when they actually came back from the shiloyah with the jug full of water and brought it into Shara Mayim, then they would blow three more as an expression of simcha, we learned in the previous parak. V'shalosh agabe mizbeach. Three, when they actually, with three by the mizbeach, Rashi explains when they're standing up the aravos around the mizbeach, which we learned in the previous parak about the aravos on each day of Sukkot. So when they're standing up the aravos around the Beis Mikdash, around the mizbeach, they would blow tkiyah through tkiyah in honor of that. Teisha l'tomet shal shachar, another nine for the tomet shal shachar, like every other day. V'teisha l'tomet shal ben abayim, like every other day. V'teisha l'musafin, there's a korban musaf every day of Sukkah, so that's another nine. And because it's Erev Shabbos, Sholosh Lahav to the Zalmin Amalacha, three to tell people to stop working, with Sholosh Lahav them in Kodesh Tepol, and three to separate between weekday and Shabbos, so that makes 48 total. Okay. So the Gemara says, Mas nisin deloike Rabbi Yehuda. It seems that our Mishnah is not like Rabbi Yehuda, that it says minimum 21 and maximum 48. The Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm going to have purchased the Yuchas Misheva, but I'm most of the Yosef of Shesh Esrei. Rabbi Yehuda says the minimum and maximum are 7 and 16. Now, they're not actually arguing on the number of blowings that were done. They both agree there's Tkiya Tshua Tkiya. Rabbi Yehuda is counting them as groups. Each group of Tkiya Tshua Tkiya, he counts as one, whereas the Chachamim and the Mishnah are counting it as three. So, but my committee, so what's the underlying machlokes? Rabbi Yehuda Sabbath, Tkiya Tshua Tkiya Achasi, he holds it's all one thing, it's all one mitzvah. But Rabbanan Sabi, Tkiya Lachud, the Tshua Lachud, the Chacham hold the Tkiya and the Tshua are considered separate parts of the mitzvah. Now, my time of the Rabbi Yehuda, why does Rabbi Yehuda say that Tkiya and Tshua and Tkiya together all constitute one mitzvah? Because Omakra, the pasuk says, "Uskatem trua," you should blow a trua. But Chatzotzot it says, "Uchtiv trua yisku," and it also continues. It says that they should blow. So first it says "Katem," Loshen Tkiya, and then trua. Then it says trua yisku. Okay, it's a Tkiya trua achasi. So evidently, Tkiya and trua are the same thing because the pasuk is using the words interchangeably. V'rabbanon, what are the Rabbanon answer to that? They say, that comes to teach us that every time you're blowing a trua, there has to be a tkiya before it and a tkiya after it. He learns that from the fact that it says, "Uskatim trua shenis." Okay, the reason why you have a bunch of parentheses over here is because Marshal takes out a bunch of these phrases from the Gemara and Marshal defends them and says they do belong in. Okay. So that's why Rabbi Yehuda holds that the Tkiya and the Trua are all the same thing because the Pasuk uses the word Tkiya and Trua interchangeably. V'Rabbanan, my time, my. Meanwhile, why do the Rabbanan hold that it's considered separate things? Omer Rachmanah, v'dichtiv, v'hakilas ha'kol, tisku v'lo yisariu. Because the Pasuk says, when you're gathering the kol together, you should blow a Tkiya, not a Trua. V'sakadai, the Tkiya, Trua, achasi. If you're going to tell me that it's all one mitzvah, Amar Achmana Paugan mitzvah Ovid or Paugan like Ovid, what's the logic? The Torah is going to tell you under some circumstances you should only do half the mitzvah. So therefore, it must be that there's separate mitzvahs. Vir Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda would answer to that. Ahula Simona Ba'alma Huda also. That's not really a mitzvah. There's a simon. You want to gather everybody together. So therefore, it's not like the mitzvah of blowing tkiya, tshua tkiya, like you have on Rosh Hashanah and like you have when you bring the korbanos or whatever. This one is just a simon. It's not really a mitzvah. V'Rabbanan, the Rabbanan answer to that. Simona, sure, we agree it's only a simon. But V'Rachmana, Shav Yemitzvah. But the Torah has made it a mitzvah to gather them together, dafka with the simon and no other. So the Gemara asks, Keman Ozla Hoda Omer of Kahana, Ein Ben Tkiya L'Trua V'Loi Klum, which opinion does it follow, this that Rav Kahana says, that there is nothing between the Tkiya and the Trua, meaning you only take a breath between them, Rashi says, Kedei Neshima, just long enough for a breath. Keman, Rabbi Yehuda, that would seem to be like Rabbi Yehuda. Now, an interesting point of that is the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda. However, there are Rishonim who learn that Veloi Klum means literally nothing at all, not even space for a breath. Now, this is Negea to us as far as when we don't blow only Tkiya Trua Tkiya because we have the suffix what a Trua is, which we'll learn about in Masechet Rosh Hashanah in a couple of months, Rez Hashem. Whether Torah called Trua is what we call Shvarim, or whether it's what we call Trua, or what we call Shvarim and Trua. Now, Shvarim and Trua, according to that, form one thing. So according to this, it would come out that according to Rashi, it would come out you're allowed to take a breath between the Shvarim and Teruah, and maybe even you have to in order to separate them. Whereas according to the other Rishonim, you would say you're not even allowed to take a breath between them. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, would be saying, in other words, according to those Rishonim, you'd have to be blowing Tzkiyah, Teruah, Tzkiyah all in one breath without even a break between them. But for us, we don't follow Rabbi Yehuda, but still it would come out that the Shvarim and Teruah have to be blown in one breath. L'maisa, because you have that machloek that's Rishonim, is why we have by the first tkiyas, by the tkiyas to Miyoshev, we do them in one breath, and then by the tkiyas to Me'umah during Shemana Esrei, we do them in two breaths, and that way, one way or the other, we yotza all the days. Anyway, so the Gemara says, "Ir Rabbi Yehuda pshita." Of course, it's according to Rabbi Yehuda. How else would you understand if you're going to say that Rav Kahana is saying you can't have klum between the tkiyah and the truah? Of course, according to the Chachamim, there'd be no problem with it. It would only be a problem according to Rabbi Yehuda. So, what do you mean? Who is it like? Of course, it's like Rabbi Yehuda. The answer is ma'od tema afilu kirabanan. Without Rav Kahana telling us, without the Gemara telling us, you would think that Rav Kahana's statement maybe even is according to the Rabbanan, and they would say a little bit of a break, fine. But that he would be telling us that the Chachamim would not agree with Rabbi Yechanan. Where Rabbi Yechanan says you could even have the nine sounds of the shofar spread out throughout the whole day, and you still yotze, as long as you don't hear other shofar sounds in between. Kamash Malan, so that therefore the Gemara wants us to know that no, that's not what Rav Kahana means. The Chachamim do hold you could have it all day. It's only Rabbi Yehuda would say that you have to have them all one right after the other, with a breath between one and the other, according to Rashi, and with no breath at all, according to the other Rishonim. So the Gemara says, "Ve'ema hachinami." How do you know? How do we, the Chachmei Gemara, know that that's what it means? Maybe Takar of Kahana means that you should know that the Chacham don't hold like Rabbi Yechanan. The answer is, "Imkein my veloy klum." Then why would he use the expression veloy klum, which means not even a small break? Then he would just say, "In ben tkiyah l'truah, whatever kol shahu or something like that." He would use some other expression. Klum implies that there can only be a tiny break, or maybe not even any break between them at all. So therefore, that would only be according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Chachamim would have no problem with it, and Rabbi Yechanan also is telling us, according to the Chachamim, that there's no problem even if it's spread out throughout the whole day. Okay, everyone.